I am Kathy Bossert, interviewer for the Burnaby Mountain Oral History Project. Today is Thursday, October 29, 2015. I am interviewing Tony Fabian at his home in Burnaby. Tony, you were actually interviewed for an oral history in 2012 by Eric Damer.
There was another fellow with me here, I think, Joe Sadowski,
remember that, but I know that you gave, it was about a 45-minute interview, it was very interesting.
Yes, you had to hear, two of us were at the...
Oh, okay. And in that interview, you described the kinds of environmental damage that you have seen in Burnaby, especially in the 1960s, and you told about your efforts since the 1960s. To protect and preserve natural areas in Burnaby. So I'd like to explore with you why you feel so passionately about nature. You were born and raised in rural Saskatchewan in the 1930s. How did your parents and the community you grew up in teach you how you ought to behave with regard to the land?
Oh, that was, it wasn't much teaching there because I was sort of... like one of these children that were taken from their homes, you know, you heard of the home children.
Oh, yes.
And the ones that were brought from England. Well, the same thing happened here, and here where farmers were destitute, you know, and so forth. The children's aid would come in, or the government agents would come in and literally take the children away and give them to farmers who didn't have any children, who wanted foster them or even adopt them. So I was one of those, and my brother and my sisters were all taken. So we lived in quite a harsh environment because those people usually didn't intend to bring up children at a cost to them and at their own, because they missed and loved children. They wanted help around the barnyard, which most of those farmers, immigrant farmers, they look forward to more children they had, the more hands that they could get free, you know, and that's the way it worked.
Were you separated from your brothers and sisters?
47 years before I found them.
Oh, my.
Yeah, it was, two of them were right here within just a few miles, and one being my twin sister, too, you know, so we were far apart, we're looking for each other, but we never found them. Yeah, because they changed the names, you see, and they also wouldn't put down the where you were born. Like I was born near cabin house, you know, as they call it. Then there was the little log house, and it was near a village. But the Children's Aid Society wouldn't put down the village name. So they would put down the name of guys who did the land, measuring the land and so forth.
Oh, the surveyors?
The surveyor's code, you know. And in my case, it was like township 51, range 17, west of the third meridian. And section 10, the southwest quarter, which was the accurate position. That's where I was born. But anybody who didn't understand the surveyor's lingo, of course, would never have been able to figure this out, you know.
What do you know what town that would have been?
Oh, yeah, I found it recently. And in fact, I did a little studying on surveying, too. How did they survey and how did they come about this thing, so now I can pretty well tell. Yeah, it was an interesting, so then when I found that out, of course, when we all found each other within a very short time, and it was by accident over the radio, a lady was discussing this, and it was called the Parent Finders, and I listened to that, and I wasn't looking for parents, I was looking for my siblings. And my sister was apparently listening to the same program. So we each called in to that same woman who was doing this, who she was, you know, that's her hobby. And I gave her the same thing as I told you about the section and so forth, and which was meaningless to her and meaningless to anybody else. And I guess she was looking at them, and she found two pieces of paper with the same, and she had a great memory. And she had two pieces of paper, and they said, well, these must be, it's the same thing. It must be. I couldn't have written around twice. So, of course, it put us together, and that was the start of things, yeah.
Did you say what town it was?
It was a place called, it was north of Battleford, near Meadow Lake, called Glasslyn. That's the name of the town. That was within a mile of the place.
And do you remember your parents then?
No. I was about just a few months. I was less than a year old when I was taken away, and my older brother and sister, they know, but they remember. But oh well, it was not uncommon on the way they handled children in those days. And there are many books written about it now, too. There are lots of books written, and Canada was pretty rough on their children. And children that came up that way, they didn't even consider them really as normal children in a way, you know. They were looked up down on, you know. They weren't accepted. It's like a new dog in town, you know. You were not part of the old family. It was definitely discriminated against in a variety of ways.
Yes. I'm just wondering what kind of connection you had with the land in that kind of situation, with the outdoors.
Well, I lived on the farm, and I liked the people that I lived with. I lived with people who I didn't speak their language, and they didn't speak my language, you know, and I couldn't, of course.
They spoke a foreign language?
Yeah, they were Hungarian, you see, and I was taken from, into what they call the shelters or orphanages, and of course there they were speaking English, and then they tell me I was taken to some other family who spoke Russian, you know, and by the time when I was about 4 years old, I went there and I spoke neither, I didn't know any language, I couldn't speak English or any of the languages, so it was a slow to acquire language at that age, it's pretty slow. And you don't really, unless you do a lot of reading and studying and so forth, you don't really, you're not capable to express yourself, and you don't know the language, you don't know, the words. And that was my downfall in many jobs and so forth. Reading instructions, it was very difficult, especially if an engineer wrote instructions about how to handle something. I read it and it didn't make any sense to me, because that's not the language I've ever heard, you know. I'll give you some a list of books on the subject matter if you're interested about how these people lived.
Yes, I would be very interested.
Yeah, it's a story that it's not... there's been an odd attempt by the government to put a little plaque here and there that children lived here, or this was at one time a shelter and so forth, but they don't talk much about it. It was nothing to be proud of, I guess, and now they come up with this Truth and Reconciliation that they're discussing now about the natives. That they were taken away from the children and put into homes and so forth, which was pretty ruthless and pretty rough on them, and many of them died in those places from a variety of reasons, usually from lack of parental attention, and that was known, children will die from that. And it was a rough for children in the olden days. There's
yes.
a very good little book there called A Heavy Load for Small Shoulders.
Oh.
And that was the one that talks about children working, A Heavy Load for Small Shoulders, and
yes.
what they had to do and what they're expected to do and so forth.
Well, how did you develop a love for nature then?
Well, this is where... I wandered around a lot, because there was nothing sort of emotional about sticking around a house and getting treats or being treated nicely or anything like that. So I wandered, and I lived near a native Indian reserve, you know, called the Muskeg Lake Reserve. And that's where I was in a part of the prairies that are called the parklands, where the variety of sloughs, you know, the waterways, and there was the forest was not far away, and there was the prairie was not far away. So I was in between. So there was lots of bird and lots of wildlife and lots of flowers. You know, I like the, you know, where miles of crocuses, you know, and especially in the spring, you know, when the meadowlarks came back and the blackbirds came back to their the ponds. You know, they had ponds and willows around it, and the blackbirds were just deafening, you know, with them making their song, you know, in their home. And it was interesting, and also saw the devastation by the farmers of the day there. Anybody had a gun, anything that walked or crawled would be shot, you know, and that sort of thing. I had a feeling for them at first, but later on, you know, you're a man, you're a boy, you're a male, you're supposed to be able to go out there and shoot and not feel any, and they treated their animals likewise, you know, it was brutal, you know, and I thought, well, you've got to learn to do this. I hated to do it, but I got to do it, and I regretted it to this day that somehow that I would let myself go ahead and do those things that I saw the other, you know, breaking horses and killing of pigs and shooting of the animals, you know, for food and so forth. And it was brutal the way they did it. There's a humane way of doing it, but it was brutal. And that's the way that life was, you know. These are farmers that came from, or not, they weren't farmers. They came from Europe. Eastern Europe mainly. They left there because they couldn't get by there, and there they lived on the more like an estate, you know, where things were done, and there was the butcher who did the butchering, and there was cooks who did cooking, and they were laborers, and they came out here, and they weren't farmers. They didn't understand farming. Very few of them were literate to any extent, you know. They couldn't read, of course, they couldn't read the English language, let alone their language. And then they just literally stayed on the land there. They had maybe children, and some of them 4, 5, 6, 8, 10 children, you know. And they didn't have that much land. They were given like 160 acres, and some of them bought land beside it. And they try to grow, have more cattle and more pigs and everything. And they had children now. Anything that was 5 years old and then older could, you know, do successful work.
Yeah.
Or be helpful. And they literally ruined the land, you know. They cut the too many animals on a small acreage, you know.
And you could see that happening.
Well, oh yeah, I could see it on the cattle. You know, we put them out to pasture, but there was no pasture there for them to, you know, it was all ground down and chewed up, and they would go and eat the brush, you know, and I didn't understand why we wouldn't take them out to the government pastures where there were lots of grass, you know. Well, that cost money, because you paid so much ahead to take them, and everything was cost of money. Even us, if you wanted a pair of rubbers or shoes, you know, that cost too much, you know. You're not paying your own way, you know, type of attitude. If you picked the eggs and you broke the eggs, then that was a cost to them. If you brought the eggs in it that were rotten, then you didn't find the eggs, you know. You bring them in when you can't, you're no good for finding eggs, you know. And it was always an excuse to put it on somebody, you know, because they, you know, I can understand it now, the one woman and a man there, and they're not being very physically strong and not educated, they wouldn't have any understanding, and they didn't have the time And they had so much land, 160 acres, that was lots of fences to be made there. They had, and then they had chickens, they had geese, and then they maybe have turkeys, and they had pigs, and then they had cows, and all these things. Well, they couldn't look after all of them, you know.
Yeah,
it was a rough life. You're running all the time.
Yes, yes. It sounds like you were hoping for a kinder, gentler, looking for a kinder, gentler situation for yourself and for the land.
If I even knew any better, too much better after a while, you know, because, you know, you'd go to school late, you know, because there are always chores to do in the morning or something happening, and then you walk to school, go to school late, and so I wasn't involved in the school too much. That didn't go over very well with the teacher or the things. They must be wrong, something wrong with the, not the family, but the kid, you know, the kid. There's something wrong with him. He can't get to school on time. And when you get home late from the school, you're walking slow or something, and then there, you know, the cows have to be brought in, and you're coming home so late. Going to school is a waste of time. You learn nothing, you know. And that was a tough life there.
When did you finally leave the farm and go on your own?
Well, they brought me out here to the coast because I guess he gave up. He had a little parcel of property out in Richmond here, and he thought he'd bring out here and he'd retire out here. But once he brought me out here, it was of no value to him, sort of thing. And I just realized it and I left. I just left.
And then what did you do?
I went to work on a chicken farm, and people that... that worked out not too bad. Yeah, the treatment was good. The hustle, you know, in the morning looking after the chicken barns, and all the rest of it. And when you came home from school, bringing in the eggs and washing and that sort of stuff. But I liked that. I liked to work, and it went over pretty good. That was about, I wasn't even 12 years old when I left the farm. So.
Oh my.
Yes.
And you were looking after yourself.
I've been on my own since. Well, these people looked after me good, you know, they fed, I got well fed and had clothes, it was good compared to others.
Yeah. So growing up on various farms, that would be a link to nature, and it sounded like you were very sensitive about nature, the birds?
Well, I was learning, you know, and I was learning as I was going along, and as I went to different farmers, you know, I see that some of them were very good about their animals, you know, and they were, when the horses were brought in and so forth, they were curried and fed well, and water, made sure that they were watered well, and looked it over to see if the harness had caused any bruising or problems, and others were not so good. But here, if you had a large dairy farm or something like that, you had to be, you had to do it right, or else the whole herd would be lost. You know, cleaning, making sure that they were clean, making sure that they were well fed, and making sure that they were got out to exercise and so forth. And and anybody who didn't do that. The place fell apart pretty fast, you know.
Okay, so one of the lessons you were learning then was that if you use the land well, it would return.
I've never seen it before where on the farm that you would, each month there, you would turn the cattle into another section of the pasture. You let them graze only so long, and there was still lots of grass, it seemed, but you moved them all over, and now they're feeding in that next pasture, and then later on the next pasture, and then you brought them back to the first one again, and it went back and forth, you see, and on the prairie you'd never think of such a thing. Not in where I lived or the people I live amongst, you know. So I could see that there was you had to look after your, not only your animals, but you had to look after the soil. And the more and more I think about it, the more and more I can see that we're depleting our land, you know, our land and sea. For instance, I'll give an example there. I was just thinking the other day, we had like millions of buffalo that would ran across the prairie, you know, and back and forth. And of course, they leave behind themselves, they defecate and leave them behind, and they fertilize the soil. And they go 1,000 miles and they come back and do it all over again and back and forth. And this has went on for thousands of years and so forth. So they're really refurbishing the soil. And I says, well, what are we doing to refurbish the soil? Those animals are all gone. So who's doing it and what are we doing to it?
Yes.
We're reaping it, but we're not sowing, you know. And the same as in the fish, you know, in the sea, the oceans. It's the same thing there too. The fish all eat some things and then they drop things and things grow and it's back and forth, you see. And those living on the bottom, they feed off it, and then the fish eat the algae and then they have the droppings, and it just goes back and forth, and it's a balanced thing. And it's the same way the way we live here. We overuse our land, that when it uses, use it as much as you can and push it to the limit with chemicals and so forth. When it's no good, then we abandon it and let the industry do their thing. And when they get finished with it, there's not much use of anything.